Happy Thursday before Christmas.
Happy Thursday. That's right. Thursday before Christmas. Brita, I've got to ask the important question right up front.
What are
you drinking?
It's really disappointing. I'm sorry. I have white wine.
That is very interesting, because I was just asking, Alan, if you were a wine person, because I have a hefty snifter of port in front of me.
Oh, port. I've never had port.
I am a big fan, and it comes from, my gosh, two jobs ago. We had a big, our company and another company formed a partnership, so the presidents of both companies, both of which were raging alcoholics, got together at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, and basically we all drank the entire night, and we finished up. Oh, it was an interesting evening. But we finished a port, after dessert port, and I just, wonderful. It was delicious. So every once in a very great while, we have a Total Wine 2 miles from us, so it's very tempting.
What is a Total Wine?
Total Wine is like the Home Depot of wines, or Best Buy. It is aisles and aisles of, there's local wines, there's international wines, there's, entire aisles of Chardonnay and, Pinot Grigio and all the different wine types. And they have craft beers, they have cigars. It is...
Wow.
It's very nice, and it's a great place to go to get Christmas presents for people.
I bet.
So
do you need my address?
I was struck by while we were, because the local wines are very near the port section. I happened to glance and I said, I haven't had port in ages. So I have a lovely Spanish port that I'm enjoying right now.
Now, what is the deal with port? It's like fortified wine, correct?
It's like 35% alcohol.
Oh.
So you're
not lifting this evening, are you?
Oh, no. No, no, no. The rain / the rain / humidity has made my shoulder go, oh, hell no.
Oh, okay.
Because it should be core day, which involves pull-ups and hanging crunches and planks and dead bugs and all kinds of things that involve rotation in the shoulder. And basically the shoulder went, oh, if you try it, we're going to kill you.
Yeah. And that's one of the hard parts about starting lifting weights and doing exercise when you're older is, like, you find out, like, oh, I have days I just can't.
Yep. Yep.
I have issues with my neck. And I find more often than not that I have issues on days like when the weather is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And, people tell me it's arthritis and I say, you're crazy. No, it's just nothing. I slept wrong. No.
No,
but, Yeah.
Yep. I
so honestly, there are days you just need to give yourself a break. I'm sorry. I'm losing my voice. I'm sorry.
So basically I slammed it extra hard on the treadmill and so that was leg day. Yeah, I cranked the incline up to like 50, but not quite.
Okay.
50. But worked it that way. So I didn't not exercise at all. I just am not doing the core routine tonight. It'll be tomorrow night. So because it's supposed to clear up and not be not 150% humidity and
right.
Yeah, I was like, why does my shoulder hurt? I didn't exert much. And oh, yeah. And then I looked outside. I'm like, oh, it's pouring. Duh. So
yeah, it's the weather.
Like, oh,
yes. It's not a joke. It really is sometimes the weather.
It's getting old and
well,
the
there's
weather.
There's a reason Brigitte Granny could tell you when a storm was coming.
Yep.
Yeah.
And why Arizona is such a vibrant retirement community, because it don't get humid in Arizona.
Right. That's so weird. I don't understand why humidity is like a thing that affects arthritis. I mean, is it like barometric pressure?
I always thought it was more of a pressure thing than.
Yeah, I think it is the barometric pressure. It's that
when it gets. And does more humidity come with more pressure? Is that the thing?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know how it works, but it sucks either way.
Well, there's definitely a pressure change usually, so especially if it's raining. So
I haven't been going to the gym lately. Mike and I, we took the week off last week, and prior to that, we just, from August until now, it has been like a really kind of shitty time in our lives. And we've just said to ourselves, like, okay, let's just give ourselves a break. If we want to go to the gym, we're going to go to the gym. If we don't feel like it, we're not going to push ourselves. It's just been, I don't know, it's just been a kind of a shitty year generally for me. And so we just kind of decided, let's give ourselves a break, you know, and usually we're like really like taskmasters, like we're going to go 3 times a week and we're going to lift and we're going to watch the diet. We're going to, you know, but sometimes I think it's important just to be like, you know, not this week or not today. I'm just going to relax and I'm going to, you know, eat my food and not worry about it, because there are bigger things to worry about rather than going and lifting heavy and what are my gains and yeah. You know, how much salad did I eat this week? You know, it's just like have priorities, and sometimes it's just sitting on the sofa with your cat.
There you go. Salads, you know. Food eats.
Oh God, salad. I had salad tonight, actually.
I'm sorry.
But I did eat, well, I had chicken thighs, so I made up for it. I don't buy chicken breasts anymore. I just buy chicken thighs. I chicken breasts, like, don't exist for me anymore. They are not a thing. I just figure, I don't know.
So you're bigger on the thighs, is what you're saying.
I love the thighs.
What's wrong with that?
And I have, like, the foolproof, most delicious, easy thigh recipe. It's like, take some thighs, pull back the skin, put some spices under the skin, close up the skin, put some other spices on top of the skin with some salt, mind you. And then fill up the pan like with chicken broth or like white wine or like apple juice, some sort of liquid, but don't cover the skin. And then cook it almost an hour at 400 until the skin is really super crispy. It's like the best chicken thighs you could ever have. Super easy, super delicious.
Yum.
Yeah. Here's your recipe for the week.
It's good.
Have you made it? Yeah.
I did. Very good. I like the crispy skin.
Yeah, well, everybody likes the crispy skin.
It's, yeah.
Wait. Except for pudding.
Except what?
When it's on pudding.
Oh.
Ew. Ew. Jay. Yeah. Nobody likes pudding skin. That's I'm not disgusting.
Wrong. Not wrong.
And, you're and not be, wrong, but ew.
It'd be even worse if it were crispy.
You know how to make pudding not have a skin?
Eat it quick?
No.
Don't eat your meat?
No, there's a way to do it.
What?
When you're putting fridge, when you're going to have pudding sitting in the fridge longer than it's going to take you to eat it, to keep it from getting that skin, get some like saran wrap and stick it directly onto the pudding, like touch
oh.
it.
Yeah.
And cover it completely and then put it in the fridge and it will get the skin. The skin is from a reaction with the air.
Right. So you get all the air out.
If you,
because you could also
don't eat pudding.
Say that again, Jay.
You could infuse it with nitrogen too. That's another.
I guess you could.
If you happen to have, you know, a nitrogen tank kicking around, a way of pressurizing your pudding.
Put some liquid nitrogen on top of it. Good.
Sorry. Pressurizing your pudding.
We did. Now that's a euphemism right there.
I'm sorry.
Walked in on my boy. He was pressurizing his pudding.
Okay. Oh,
this is still an explicit show.
That's right. We have to earn that tag from time to time.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's a visual.
Oh my gosh, this is some.
Speaking of pressurizing your pudding.
Yes.
Did you see this happen last week? The members of Congress will have to pay out of pocket to settle sexual harassment claims from now on.
I know, the horrors. Imagine that, using their own money.
I know. It's crazy. I can't believe they got away with it for this long.
The fact that anybody even thought of that is like, what? You know? Yeah,
it is. Hey, let's use taxpayer money to pay off our sexual harassment claims.
Yes.
And
yes.
Nobody said, wait a minute, maybe you shouldn't.
I've got an idea. How about if you not have sexual harassment claims? Maybe that.
Well, there's that.
You know.
No. Yeah. That's not possible.
Well,
I mean,
we need people like John Conyers.
If you can't sexually harass your employees, why bother to become a congressman?
That's right. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Certainly seems so for some people.
I just thought that was interesting. That, you know.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You know, when we shared that link, what, like 2 weeks ago, I actually looked up the amount of taxpayer dollars that was spent on that, and it was like almost $1 million.
Oh,
if I remember,
it was more than that.
I can't remember.
It was like since
the tab.
Yeah, it's like they did it, you know, since whatever date it was. It's like $17 million.
$17 million. Oh. Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah,
since 1990 or 1980 or whenever it was they started doing it.
Well, thank you, Donald Trump.
That's all. That's nothing. Come on. Yeah.
Oh, since 1995. Or no.
Oh, Bill anyway. Clinton. Go figure.
Yeah, I don't know. It's you know, we're probably getting the dates wrong. But anyway.
$1 million over 20 years? That's actually not terrible. I mean, that's less than a million a year.
Oh, just less a million.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, I mean, assuming they're paying out, you know, 50 to 100,000 per claim, I mean, that's, you know, you figure the size of Congress and the amount of time. They're only harassing, you know, several dozen women a year.
Yeah, no big deal.
Only. You know, I wonder about that. Like, now that the whole Me Too craze is over, because it is over now. There was like that trend, like everybody's coming forward. Oh, I'm being sexually harassed by this one, that one, or you know, I was raped by so and so. Now that whole thing is over, you know, it's still continuing, right? Because it does.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just stopped.
But I think of people like John Conyers, right? Where it was a known fact for all of the female staff, like, don't be alone with him in his office. And nobody said anything. And then on top of it, nobody said anything when taxpayer dollars are being spent on these settlements. It's very disturbing.
Because everyone knew.
Everyone knew. Yeah. I don't know.
Siri heard something that made it, that sounded like her name. Man. I wish you could change that.
What? Siri?
Yeah, you, change it to...
You can with Alexa.
Yeah, you can't with Siri.
Really? That's unfortunate.
Alexa's Google, right?
Alexa's Amazon.
Amazon. Oh.
Yeah. We bought it completely, so...
Oh, yeah, I saw a thing. My 401k provider has got a thing where you can tie it into Alexa. Where you can say, hey, Alexa, what's my 401k balance or something like that? I'm like, yeah, right, because I want to give Amazon access to my 401k account. Right.
Your 401k information.
Yeah, sure.
There's no possible way that could go wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know,
this sounds like my day at the library,
Facebook
actually.
Wants access to your bank accounts, you know.
This sounds like my day at the library.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've had this little old lady coming in for like the past week, and she's trying to kind of manipulate all of the librarians into doing dealing with a banker for her. And this banker, and I'm convinced is like a Nigerian prince, who is trying to sell her this too good to be true loan. And, you know, she has to keep coming back for the multiple steps, you know, to get this really super great loan. Oh. And she has to like create a login, and then she has to give them her bank account numbers. And then she has to, I mean, it's like this ongoing, like every day there's a new step that she has to come in and do. And she's hard of hearing, and she has a flip phone. And so she comes in and she wants us to talk on her flip phone to this, like, you know, Nigerian prince offering her this great loan.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
Nope.
Wow. Can we talk about the movie? Can we talk about the movie?
Can we talk about the movie? What movie, Alan?
The Jackson World War One movie.
Well, you have to kind of segue into it. I'm just trying to give you an out.
I can't segue.
So, talking about things that are old, World War One is. It could be, you know, it's Christmas. 5 golden rings. There was a gold ring in Lord of the Rings, directed by Peter Jackson, who also directed They Shall Not Grow Old.
Who also looks like a hobbit.
Well, Jay, you are a master, segue master.
it is a rare martial art. I am a segue master. Oh, now I'm appropriating culture. Fuck.
So I went to see the movie. Brita went to see it.
I did.
All I can say is, holy crap. If you got, I think there's one more chance to see it on the 27th.
I still don't think you've said the title of the movie.
They Shall Not Grow Old.
Right. Why don't you like tell a little bit about the movie? Go on for our listeners.
Well, if you've been hiding under a rock and haven't paid attention, Peter Jackson, the famous director, where did it come from? It was the British World War One archive. I can't remember who it was.
BBC.
Imperial War Museum.
That's what it was.
Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
Gave Peter Jackson 100
hours.
Hours. Of film shot during World War One, and said, you know, here, and they had all these recordings from these like veterans that survived World War One, and they were recorded like in the 60s and 70s, where they talked about their experience and stuff like that. And the, you know, I think Peter Jackson, he gave a 30 minute thing, a little speech about how they made the movie after the movie. And in a lot of ways, that little 30 minutes was more amazing than the movie itself. Although the movie was incredible. So the Imperial War Museum gave him 100 hours of video and said, here, do something original with it.
But he colorized it.
Oh, he did more than that. He took, before he decided what he was going to include in the movie, he took all 100 hours and digitally processed it, fixed the frame rate, interpolated frames. So like when it was done, you know, this was hand crank movie cameras, and they found out that the film, the frame rate was anywhere from like 10 to 18 frames per second. And a lot of times it varied like in the same role because the guy turning the crank sped up or slowed down, which is why every time you see it, you know, every time you've seen it before now, it's all kind of like herky jerky and all that kind of stuff. So they digitally processed every single frame of 100 hours of the film. And then they went back and they cleaned it all up, got rid of all the scratches, increased the resolution, stuck in frames, additional, it basically interpolated frames within the frame so they could play it at 24 frames a second, and then colorized it. All 100 hours. And then he started looking at it and deciding what he was going to piece together to make this almost 2 hour long movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely incredible. Sorry, Jay.
They had lip reading experts.
Yes.
Which of course it sounds awesome, except there's also the whole bad lip reading thing. And I'm just like, I'm waiting for someone to come out with that.
They had these people called forensic lip readers, which is amazing by itself. But there's one piece in the movie where there's an officer that's like reading a telegram to a bunch of guys before they go off and die. It's one of these like motivational, you know, we know you will do your best, and you know, that kind of thing. But they didn't know what he was reading to the troops. It was very difficult to figure it out. So they went and they found out what unit it was. And then they went and got all the archives from that unit. And they found the paperwork that was from that particular day. And they found the telegram from that particular day. And Peter Jackson read it into his phone and sent it to the sound guy. And the sound guy, you know, sped it up, slowed it down until he got something that kind of matched what the guy was saying. So they kind of knew that's what he was saying. So then they went and got a guy from the same town that that officer was from to read the text of the memo to put in the movie.
Huh.
So that the accent would be the same.
Right. And they did that for every single person who spoke on the film that wasn't one of the voiceover, you know, one of the old guys that was speaking their memory.
Right.
So every time you see somebody talking on the film, it's an actor who was hired from the same town that guy was from to speak the words that he was saying to the camera. Like, hi, mom, or they're filming us, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever the guy was saying. It was just amazing that the steps they went through for this thing. It was just, it's incredible. And now the Imperial War Museum has 100 hours of film of World War One that looks like it was shot with modern cameras.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely amazing. It is, you know, you got to, okay, so these are big boxy cameras and they have to be on tripods. They're not handheld. So what you see is a lot of wide angle shots of guys walking around in and out of trenches. They don't really have much combat footage because you're not going to drag a camera into the mud of no man's land to watch, you know, guys charge across into a machine gun. So, but what they do have a lot of is basically people going about their daily life in the trenches. And, you know, this is not a movie for people that don't like to see actual dead people.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of actual dead people and body parts and stuff like that, which is, you know, accurate also, because these poor soldiers basically lived in a slaughterhouse.
Yeah. You know,
for years.
That's the thing that struck me. Like, I kept on thinking, like, did no one have any sense of hygiene at that point?
No.
I mean, it was like, you know, 1915, 1916, 1917. Like, no one had any thought of, hey, there are dead bodies rotting next to right where I'm sleeping. Maybe we should...
No.
Do something about that? I mean,
actually, back then, the germ theory was still newfangled and not trusted by all the doctors.
And how far have we come in 100 years? I mean, literally, it's just a decade. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, we have film footage, movie footage. You know, think about it. We have movie footage of soldiers in World War One who, at the same time of being able to be captured on film, do not have germ theory.
Yeah.
And in 100 years, how far have we come? And I think it's interesting that we had film footage before we had germ theory.
Well, they had the germ theory.
Well, yeah. Well, apparently not enough.
Well, you know, this was...
I know it's war. I know.
Yeah. They... I mean, germ...
I know. Everybody's going to die. Everybody... anyway, I understand. It was kind of like that situation where, like, well, we're in it, and here we are, and there's lots of dead people, and what are we going to do?
Right.
Well, we got to carry on, right?
I mean, they didn't really come up with the whole concept of antiseptic surgery until like the late 1800s. And here here we are in the, you know, 1914, 15, 16, 17, 18. I mean, it's not that much further. And, you know, these, you know, I am sure that a lot of the guys that made it, I mean, you see guys, there's a really horrific shot of these guys walking along that basically were blinded by gas.
Right.
And they're walking along, they got bandages around their eyes, and they've got like the guy reaching out, they're holding onto the shoulder of the guy in front of them, and they're just in a line stumbling down the road. And those bandages aren't antiseptic. It's just a piece of cloth.
Yeah. Probably somebody's bloomers 3 days ago, you know.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, you got to figure, there is literally nothing clean.
No, there couldn't have been.
Yeah.
There couldn't have been. In the trenches, there couldn't have been.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's a testament to what humans can withstand.
Yeah.
And the insanity that afflicts the species. You know, I mean,
I would recommend it to anyone.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? You say that it's not for a movie for people who don't like seeing dead people, but I think it's important at a certain level for people to see it. Because I think about the end of the film where they had those interviews of the men who had survived, and they said that they came back. And nobody talked to them about it.
Right.
And nobody had a real sense of what they went through. And nobody wanted to talk about it. And everybody was just carrying on. And everybody, you know, it wasn't like a thing. You know, you came back from the war and your family just expected you to go on and not talk about it, not be affected. And they, I mean, World War One was horrific. Like on a level that I don't think that, thank God, has been seen since. I mean, every war is horrific, but I think World War One was just...
It was every bit as much, I think, on the level of the Germans killing the Jews in industrial fashion, because, I mean, that's what this was. This was the industrial slaughter of soldiers on the front lines through gas, through shelling, through, you know, I mean, they got, you know, this is in these battlefields in France, they every year they have the Iron Harvest where the shells that didn't explode come up, you know, from the plowing, and they just kind of pick them up and toss them beside the road. And some military unit comes by and picks them up, and, you know, that stuff's going to be coming up for another 100 years or more. I mean, it's just the amount of, you know, the only reason they know how many people died is because it's not because they found these particular bodies and could bury them. It's because they took the people that they sent minus the people that came back and said, oh, that's how many people died.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, because there's no possible way they could have, you know, you've got, you know, these guys in trenches and a shell hits and they're turned into paste. It's really, you see their faces and you see, you know, at various times in the film, they're, you know, they're laughing and they're talking, and there's some that you see that look like they're just scared to death.
Yeah.
And
what struck me was also their ages. They really focused on how young most of these men were. I mean, they were like 16,
14,
17, 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy that said is he went in and the recruiter asked him how old he was, and he said he was 16, and the guy told him to go outside the door to the street, have a birthday, and come back in.
Right. And these are essentially children that they were sent. And I think, you know, well, I mean, they knew it. They knew they needed men. They knew, and they didn't have enough. And then, so they started sending children.
Yeah, pretty much. And I thought it was interesting to see the interaction with the German soldiers also. The ones they captured that didn't want to be there either.
Yeah.
You know.
So, well, wasn't it the story where they had a ceasefire for Christmas?
Oh, yeah, that was the first year. They made sure that never happened again.
Yeah.
Can't have that.
Yeah, that was the first Christmas after the war started, and then they made absolutely sure it never happened again. You can't have the enemy looking too humid.
Right.
So anyway, that's it. You got one more chance to see it in the theater before it goes to DVD, and you really need to see it in the theater.
I regret that Mike and I didn't stay for the extra 30 minutes. After the credits, but it was, you know, we were just like, let's go home.
Yeah, you definitely.
We'll see it eventually on DVD.
That's what I figure is I'll pick it up on Blu-ray. Well,
because he goes through in just, you know, the detail and the amount of effort that he went into to make everything accurate was just incredible. When they colorized it, they didn't just colorize it. They got like actual uniforms from World War I and matched the color. And then they realized that, oh, look, these aren't all the same color. The uniforms varied in color, even on the same side. So, you know, khaki was not one color. It was a bunch of different colors.
It's more of a family.
And he said that they had the biggest problem they had with colorizing was matching the color of the vegetation in the area, because it was actually harder to do that. And so Jackson went out to a battlefield with his camera and went to the actual trench lines and the actual places where they had filmed these soldiers and took pictures of the vegetation so they could get the color right. And, you know, it's just mind-boggling the efforts they went through to make this as absolutely accurate as possible. It's incredible. I mean, it's on several levels. It's an amazing look at these guys that fought in World War I, but it's also an amazing technical triumph. I mean, it's just incredible.
I found out this week that my grandfather was a World War I veteran. However, never got sent overseas. So I'm grateful for that, because I may have not ever been here. So.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed, I don't want to say enjoyed, because it was like so grim and so... you know, it's hard to watch at some points.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the work that Peter Jackson put into it, because it was like incredible. Because it was so grim, I can't say enjoyed, but it was like, I'm glad I know. I'm glad I saw it. I have a better sense of, you know, you always know, like, oh, World War I, they were in trenches and they were, you know, it was horrible and mud and blah, blah, blah. But like to see it and to actually hear the voice of the people who are there and to see the humanity of the people who were there. it's really affecting. And I think World War One was kind of like that turning point in war, where like you have the old style of war where all the regiments line up and they fight each other in the battle. And then you have World War One where, oh my gosh, like technology is starting to happen, and like the whole thing with tanks, and nobody knew really how to deal with it. I mean, you have tanks and you have horse-drawn cannons at the same time. I mean, it's like this weird intersection of the old and the new, and and it was interesting from that standpoint, like of how the shift happened, like of, because the next big war after that was World War II,
and it was completely different.
Right,
completely different.
Yeah. At least germ theory had caught up.
Yeah,
thank God.
Yeah, that was and like most, I don't, you know, most wars, more people die from disease than they do from actually getting killed by the enemy. I think that holds true for World War One. However, there were so many people killed by the shelling and machine guns that it, you know, I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, it's entirely, I mean, you think about stomping through mud for literally years, that is nothing but the semi-solid remains of everybody that walked on that ground before you, and think of the amount of disease and it's a wonder everybody just didn't fall down dead the minute they set foot on the place. It's just crazy.
I correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole trench thing seems really unique to World War One.
Actually, it's not.
Well, I mean, I know there was trenches, but it was just like, I mean, previous to World War One.
Yeah, well, trenches,
it just seems, it was like the thing in World War One, and that's all they did.
Well, trenches were like the epitome of World War One, but they used trenches were in use, especially during sieges, like for hundreds of years, because that was how you approached a castle or some, or a fort that had.
Right. That's what I'm cannons. Saying. The whole old and new thing. That's what it seemed like to be. Right. It seemed like the old siege theory of like, right, where you have a siege of a castle or a thing, and then you're lobbing. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. They, It just didn't work, and they just sat there and ground up against each other, and it just killed people by the hundreds of thousands. And you know, at a certain point, you know, you got to wonder. It's like, you know, why did they keep doing it? You know,
yeah.
Why did they keep throwing people into the sausage grinder like that? And in fact, that's one of the big reasons that, I mean, there are a great many reasons the Russian Revolution happened, but this World War One was one of them, because the Russian army said, fuck this, we're not doing it, and basically mutinied. And that was a big part of the Russian Revolution.
They said, we're not going to be your cannon fodder anymore.
Yeah. So. Wow. And,
anyway, highly recommended.
Yep.
See it, you know.
Oh, we'll, and I want to see, I hope eventually someday, because he converted the whole 100 hours, and you only see like an hour and a half.
I'm sure it'll be on sale for DVD next Christmas.
Oh yeah, surely. But I hope.
With a figurine, knowing Peter Jackson.
Who looks like a fucking hobbit himself. Sure. I've never seen Peter Jackson actually on video given an interview before, but he does before and after this movie. And he looks like a hobbit. I swear. When you see him, you'll go, man, that guy's a hobbit. So anyway, moving on.
Okay. And that positive note,
Alan, you can't force a segue, man. It just has to like happen.
Uh oh.
This has to, like, happen, man.
Are you going to segue us, Jay?
I'm trying to find a segue, man. All I can think of is that little thing that you're riding around on.
If you ride around, if you do that, you got to wear a little helmet with a flashing light, because nothing says dork like a segue.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what planet segues are cool, because it ain't this one. But, yeah, I've been listening to Santa Claus and His Old Lady by Cheech and Chong way too much. Oh, man. All of a sudden, I start appropriating cultures and all kinds of shit.
You can't do
that. Wasn't it like
talking? You're brown enough, Jay.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, technically, I'm 3.5% Hispanic, so I'm good.
There you go. You can pass. Totally. So there, don't worry about it.
You know.
That's more than Elizabeth Warren.
That's right. I'm more Hispanic than Elizabeth Warren is Indian. I guess I actually heard she's starting to pull back on that, which somebody finally got through to her with a clue bat, because it's like, look, you are never going to get people to buy that you're of American Indian heritage.
No. I'm more Neanderthal than Elizabeth Warren. is Native American. Yeah. And for your information, I do not have any sort of brow ridge whatsoever. I was, however, born with hair on my back.
Hey.
So, you know.
There's the Neanderthal.
There you go.
That's my Neanderthal gene.
That's the Neanderthal. Curious breed is our little prehistory.
Love this. That's okay. You know, I wanted to bring up, there's no segue for this, but Alexandria, I think we should have a weekly Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez segment.
Okay.
Because she is really, bless her heart, the gift that keeps on giving.
I was going to ask if she would have enough to fill a week, and then I realized who we were talking. Of course. To the best of my knowledge, she has not claimed Guam would tip over, so she's ahead of Hank Johnson.
She totally is, yeah. Although, you know, the day is still young.
And it is an incredibly low bar.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Brita. What did the infamous AOC do this time?
The AOC. We should have the AOC segment every week for the next 2 years, because that's as long as she's going to last. I think it's 2 years, but she's like super popular on Instagram. Did you know this?
I did not know this.
Like she does live streams, like live. I don't know if it's Facebook or Instagram. I don't know. These kids with their technology, but she does things like she will do streams from her kitchen where she's cooking. I think the first one that she did that like kind of exploded the internet, she made macaroni and cheese, and it was like a live stream on her. Well, you know, macaroni and cheese
from the box,
but no.
From the box.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was from the box, but I didn't watch the thing.
You would get lost. God,
I can't stand her voice for more than five seconds. So it may have been from the box. It may not have been. But anyway, people loved it either way. It could have been anything. And I think the last thing that she cooked on her channel was black bean soup or something like that. But she is kind of like an Instagram and social media sensation. Which I think, you know, the new generation, the millennials, I guess. I don't know. Would they be the ones voting for her now? Millennials.
Oh, there we go. Free on her Instagram. Free college for all. Free healthcare for all. Abolish ICE and a Green New Deal.
Aw. Right. Well, just this week, she came out talking about how she's going to take a week off to focus on self-care, which self-care in my mind is like, you know, have a lot of wine and maybe paint your nails. I don't know. But she was focusing on self-care before her job technically even started.
Yeah, I was wondering what she was going to take a break from, because she's not doing anything at this time.
Well, I think the contrast between what her life is now and her life as kind of like a bartender, kind of hippie chick doing yoga, making kombucha. I'm not sure what she did in her previous life, but her life now is not the same. And I think she's kind of a little bit bending under the pressure. You know, she used to do yoga. She used to make dinners for her and her boyfriend, you know, and now she's under pressure, and she has a job, and she has stress, and oh my gosh, and how should she practice self-care in this week that she is taking off?
She has on her Instagram a cartoon version of herself quoting herself on multiple entries, folks. This, you know what? This frightens the shit out of me, because she's every bit the narcissist that fucking Obama was, or is, I should say.
Yeah.
She is every
bit. She is, of course. It's the generation.
Oh my God.
She's popular on Instagram. Therefore, she should get elected.
Right. Yeah. 1.1 million followers, which is actually surprising that it's that low. Except no corporate lobbyist. Oh, honey, bless your heart.
Not yet.
I'm going to call bullshit on that right now.
I'd love to see her portfolio in 2 years. See how that works out.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to have trouble making her rent in 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. I was just reading a thing where the people that have been in the house for a while are starting to throw her under the bus. Claire McCaskill gave an interview where she said, I worked on a bill that brought down the price of hearing aids. It was a big deal because hearing aids aren't covered by Medicare. But nobody wrote about that, so nobody knew about it. But there's so much drama over that New York woman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like she's the new shining object. That's how the media covers stuff now. And some of us are passing good old-fashioned bills, and we get nothing. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Girl, fight!
Well, here's the thing.
Girl, fight!
She's 29, and she's got a post from, when the hell is this? May of this year. 10 years ago, I worked in Ted Kennedy's Foreign Affairs Immigration Constituent Office. When you were 18? In New York.
Maybe.
I.
Do you have doubts?
I've got to call bullshit on this. I'm sorry. You were 18 years old in New York working for Ted Kennedy's office. First of all, 10 years ago, Ted Kennedy was in the final spiral of brain cancer. And he's, in case you forgot, a Massachusetts senator. Why did he have an office in New York? Although she did go to BU, so it's possible.
Well, if she was working, she was volunteering and not getting paid.
Yeah. Regularly fielded calls from panicked mothers who came home to missing family members. Well, you know what? Come to the fucking country legally. Gee, what a crazy idea.
I was interested in this self-care angle that she was talking about this week, because this self-care thing is kind of this liberal thing, right? Most of us like get up in the morning, we're like, oh fuck, I'm really tired and shit, like where's my coffee, you know? And then you drag your ass to work, and your self-care is like, oh, I'm gonna look at kittens on the internet while, you know, people sling insults at me at the reference desk, you know, one of those. But but I was thinking about this self-care thing, and I was like, you know, it's kind of a female-male thing. And I can see how it resonates with other women where they're like, yeah, you go, you know, you should, you know, everybody was cheering her on her social media about this self-care thing. And I just wondered, from a male female point of view, what would you guys consider a self-care thing that you do for yourselves?
Showering?
No, aside from like basic hygiene. Like an extra little thing that you do for yourself, like outside of your normal routine, that kind of like makes, I'm having a hard time describing this, but like it kind of like makes you feel good, and like kind of like it's like a palate cleanser for the rest of your week, and you're like, okay, I'm good now. Like, you know, guys don't understand this.
I don't know, sex maybe, I guess. I mean,
that's self something else, Alan. Even self occasion. She really thinks very highly of herself. I'm scrolling Instagram.
I'm having a hard time with this whole.
This is my whole point.
Because it seems, it seems like some people that don't actually work for a living do. To like justify why they don't work for a living. You know, oh, I need to take care of myself. No, you need to go out and get a fucking job.
So there's nothing that you would do that you'd be like, oh, I'm doing this little special thing for myself just to, you know, improve my week or
I mean, nothing I would call like self-care. That just seems dumb.
Guys don't do self-care. Yeah. We wake up, we get dressed, we go to fucking work. Done.
Yeah. I guess our self-care. We make money.
If anything for self-care, it's like, I guess it's, you know, hitting the treadmill. Yeah. You know, it's getting down to the gym weights. It's getting on a bike and you know, putting 10 miles in the neighborhood. We just do it.
I don't think that qualifies as self-care by her definition though, Jay.
No,
this is more like code for like justifiable laziness.
Hmm.
Is the impression I get. Every time I've ever seen somebody go, oh, I need self-care, it's they're going to lay around and not do anything for a day or two. I mean, that's called weekends for the most part, you know, when you can get it. I mean, I don't know, you know, I wouldn't call it self-care, though. That just, like so many things the millennials do, it just seems like justification for not accomplishing something.
This is fascinating. Self-care. This is the exact conversation I was hoping for.
What is
it really is. Because if you talk to any woman about self-care, they'd be like, yeah, maybe I take a bubble bath or I have a glass of wine or I go out and I get my nails done. Or it's like this, it's this woman thing where we're like, I treat myself to little things and it kind of like improves my whole like week, or like it makes my whole bad day go away, or you know, that whole thing. But men, you guys just slug it out, man.
I'm telling you, sex.
I'm just saying
that's
that
that's the closest thing I can come up with. That's what you're talking about is self-care.
And I just want to say that this ties into your movie, because one of the things I noticed in the movie was how one of the interviewees said that we just did what we were told. We had a job to do and we didn't think about it and we just did it.
Yep.
And I want to celebrate that. And I want to say thank you so much for all the men who do that every single day for your families and for yourselves. And you just do your jobs and, you don't focus on yourselves, and it's really appreciated probably more than you know. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So.
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental, you know, this is one of those men and women are different kind of things. That's
it, like, definitely is.
Yeah, because when it, you say self-care, my brain goes, huh?
Yes. Well, I think on a certain level also that I think men are taught to, you know, keep the stiff upper lip and get on with it and do your job and worry about your feelings later and all that stuff keeps getting pushed aside. Yeah.
Suck it up and do the job.
Right. And I don't know what the cost is. Like, I know that women like crack under that. You know, we need to, you know, we need to cry and decompress and paint our nails and do all the girl stuff or else we crack. And, you know, I'm speaking from personal experience, of course. I'm sure every woman's different, there is a difference. And I thought about that moment in the movie compared to, you know, this, you know, little Alexandria. I was doing kind of like a compare and contrast. And I was thinking, you know, for generations, forever, not even generations, but like for millennia, men have just done their job. I'm not saying that women haven't either, but it's like a different thing. But I think, I think in this society that we have right now, that one is celebrated and the other isn't. You know, women are like, oh, hey, girl power, and go do your thing, and self care, and I think that the male, you know, equivalent is not celebrated for what it is.
Unless you're a guy that wants to identify as a woman.
I can't even address that anymore because I just don't understand it anymore.
How many genders are we up to now? I've lost.
I don't know.
You're 40 or like 75.
I mean, you have like men who want to identify as women, but then they want to be lesbians. So like, aren't you? It's very confusing. I know.
Yeah, try to wrap your head around that. You're a dude that wants to be a woman, but you still like women.
You can't
find a lesbian because lesbians don't like dudes, and you're a dude. As far as a lesbian's concerned, you're a dude.
They hate if they won't go out with you.
You can, you know, so what you need to find is a woman that likes guys, but not manly guys.
Lady boys.
Yeah, that's what you...
And a woman who wants to be a man, who wants to be a gay man.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah,
I'm out.
It gets so twisted up. It's like, whoa.
Confusing. What are you...
All I can say is those people thank God for the internet because that's the only way you're going to find somebody.
That's true. God love them.
You're going to find that one person in the entire planet that matches whatever the hell it is you're looking for. Good luck.
I hope they do. Yeah. How do we get on this subject?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Is it late?
Yep. Oh, look at that. Look at the time. It's gone by quickly.
Wow.
Okay, anyway, if anybody is interested in the movie, They Shall Not Grow Old, the next showing is December 27th, and there are two showings, I believe. Check, you know, it's the internet. Google it.
Yeah.
I believe there are two showings on December 27th. You know, check for your area.
Check early because they were sold out.
Buy tickets if you can because it was very crowded in theater.
And given the press it's had since.
Yeah.
This week, it's probably going to sell out.
Right.
So if you want to see it before it comes out on DVD.
I'll probably get the DVD just because it sounds like something I want to own.
Yeah. Probably.
Oh, yeah, I could see.
I mean, your children might like it too. So.
Yeah, and it's neat. My son's a huge World War II buff. I think this would be cool because it's kind of like the precursor.
Mm-hmm.
It's World War II was a sequel to World War One. I mean, it was, you know, they took a few decades off and they had to wait for technology, had to do some script rewrites, you know.
Germany had to gain some XP.
Yeah, that's right. They had to mine some gold.
Mine.
Oh my God.
Build some tanks.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing to think that, you know, because we've all seen video footage from World War II. You know, there's a ton of it. Oh, you've heard the broadcast, and you just, you know, World War One is like this weird in between because we had pictures in the Civil War.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have actual photographs from the Civil War, and then you had video, lots of video from World War II. World War One's like crickets.
Yeah.
Like, well, we know there was color photography. We know there was photography because it predates World War One. But, yeah, anyway, how about that World War II, everyone? You know, yay, killed Nazis. And, you know, mm-hmm. Kaiser's like, what's a guy going to do to get some respect around here? I mean, we murdered an archduke for crying out loud.
Yeah, actually, one of the moments in the show, in the movie, one of the interviewees was like, you know, we kind of figured like, well, they killed some guy. Like, he didn't even really understand why he was there.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
It just seemed like the most senseless war that, to me... Just visually, I was like, there's like guys in trenches hundreds of yards apart that like spent years lobbing things at each other.
Like, oh, yeah. And they had to build, you know, this elaborate system of drainage and whatnot. You got trench foot.
Right.
It was so bad that they had a word for it.
You got trench. And they show pictures of it in the movie.
And they show pictures. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, guys' feet would literally freeze standing in the trenches.
Ugh.
Unimaginable.
And on that note.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Are we going to do a show next week? Anybody, do we know? It'll be the 27th.
Sure, why not?
I'm here.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week. We'll talk about how our Christmas was.
Something.
What did you get for Christmas? That's going to be the next one.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
I know. I know what the Harris County got. They got my property taxes this week.
Aw. Merry Christmas, Harris County.
Yeah. No kidding.
Hey, get off my lawn.
Yeah. All right. Bye, everyone.
Okay.
Y'all.
Good night.